This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
From North, South, East, and West, North America, Japan, and back again, this is your home for modern-day wrestling. With the occasional trip back in time, it's Place to Be Nation's main event. Now let's head into Studio B with your host, Scott Criscolo, and the godfather, Nate Milton.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to your home for everything modern-day wrestling, here, there, and everywhere, Place to Be Nation's main event. I am your tri-host, Scott Criscolo. Welcome to episode 139, the final show of 2019. Another year in the books for this fine program known as Place to Be Nation's main event. And I cannot believe that I've been doing this show for 5 years. 5 years. I started doing this show in 2014. When I started this show and my PIC, Mr. Azzaro, started the Kevin Kelly Show, I have done just this show, and Justin has done about 11, including shows with both these guys. And, of course, they have migrated here to where it all happens. And it's an honor to have both these guys on this fine program as another year is in the books. December is a fun month for pro wrestling, and I'm looking forward to talking about it. We have a big show this weekend from one promotion. Two big shows next weekend from two promotions, the Big Flamethrower. And right now, kind of my favorite underdog promotion has a pay-per-view next Saturday. I'm kind of pumped about it. I'm watching it, doing a reaction show about it. Maybe these people will join me. Let me bring in my guys. First off, we're going to do this in reverse because I always introduce one guy first. But since he's actually here tonight, plugged into the 56K out in the outhouse behind the hammock. Things are actually working up in the tundra. He is the conscience of Place to Be Nation. Welcome back, technology and all, out of Vince Lombardi's house, Mr. Steve Willey. You've got mail.
How's it going, everybody?
It sounds like my bite. And that's what I think about Chris Jericho. No.
I am calling from the bottom of Lake Michigan right now. And if I sat any closer to my router, I would be like impaled right now.
You would have cancer?
Yes. It is. And I have everyone sounding clear.
Yes.
Ironically, the internet at my work has been out the last 2 days, but it's working fine at my house. So
that's what matters, really. Yeah, that's really what matters. No one cares about. So tell me, why do you feel that your son needs to wear Dark Order t-shirts? Because number one, you don't even have Dark Order t-shirts. Anyway, Steve, it's good to have you on tonight to conclude this fine year of wrestling. This guy. I've talked a lot with this guy over the last, 2 weeks, besides main event. I have been on not one but two reaction shows with him, and he's awesome, as always. He is the co-founder and the co-proprietor of the Kings of Sport Patreon site. He'll talk more about that in a little bit. He delivered a hello to our man, Papa Marcus. And I think one day, 2020, that is my goal. Godfather Nate Milton, we need Papa Marcus on the show. What's up, brother?
What's going on, Scotty? I think we might be able to make that a reality. And I think the reason why you can't find Dark Order t-shirts for kids is because they're all like triple XL and above.
Yeah.
So, right. I mean, who's wearing these shirts? Greg Ostertag? I mean, come on.
Dwayne Shinsis? Oh, man. Look at this Olive Garden middle of NXT. Oh, yes, we are splitting the war tonight. The gentlemen have on Dub, and I have on NXT. Great six-man main event. The era, sans Bobby Fish, taking on the other three, of course, Tommaso Ciampa and Keith Lee. and Mr. D. How is his name actually pronounced? Dijak? Is it Dijakovic? Dijakovic. That's it. Dijakovic. That's the main event on. And on Dynamite, what is it right now? Is it Janela and Moxley right now?
Yes, Janela and Moxley. Running it back from Fyter Fest.
Fyter Fest, correct. Gentlemen, final show of 2019, episode 139. And there's not a ton of 39s. We're definitely in like weirdo stage, guys, for numbers. There's a few good 40s. When we get to like 40 through 40, like 44 is a huge number. 42 is a big number. 41 is a big number. So we'll get some decent numbers when we get into the early 40s. But 39 is a rough one. The only three I have, he was the fullback of the only undefeated team, beginning to end, sorry, Pats fans, in the history of the National Football League. He also played for the Giants at the tail end of his career. He had one of the ugliest noses in NFL history. He is former Dolphins fullback Larry Zonka, number 39. Also wearing number 39 is a guy that Steve and I's hockey teams dealt with throughout much of the 80s and much of the 90s. He mostly was a Buffalo Sabre. In fact, he got the Sabres to the Stanley Cup Finals in 1999 when that infamous Brett Hull goal happened in the crease. And then he did he win a cup with the Red Wings? I'm trying to remember.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he did. We are talking, of course, about the Dominator, number 39, Dominic Hasek. And finally, Major League Baseball, a legendary number 39. He was one of the first great black catchers, and he's in the Hall of Fame. He is number 39 for the Brooklyn Dodgers, Mr. Roy Campanella, who, of course, got in a car accident and spent most of the rest of his life in a wheelchair. But one of the great catchers of all time and was on that 55 Dodger team that finally beat the Yankees. And a guy that does not belong with the other three guys, but he's doing pretty good for me right now. He is probably the Lakers' top reserve after being a complete bust as a starter. Number 39 in your program and in my heart, Dwight Howard of the Los Angeles Lakers.
Possibly the best hair in basketball right now.
He really does. He definitely does. He makes it look better than Kawhi, I think.
Yeah.
Any of the 39s, guys? We'll have to look some up. We'll check.
Did you say Dave? Did you say Dave Parker?
The fucking Cobra! Jesus, how did I forget him? He's hanging in my closet. Dave Parker is actually hanging in my closet, Steve. Because I was
waiting for the Cobra. I was wondering where he was.
I'll do anything for the fucking Cobra.
Yeah, Nate stole my Greg Oster tag. I was like, oh, that's a good deep cut. The big O. Kansas, like probably on Sega Genesis basketball.
Yep, the Coach K's basketball.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh my god! But yes, oh my god, the Cobra. I have a 39 in my closet. The Cobra, Dave Parker, for the Pittsburgh Pirates. We actually talked about the Cobra this past week when myself, Mr. Atherton, the Doctor, and Mr. D'Amato did the Year in Pop 1979. Because that year, of course, Dave Parker won the All-Star Game MVP for throwing out two guys at home at the Kingdome in Seattle. So we are the second time this week I've made a Cobra reference because Dave Parker kicks ass and takes names. He had a great picture. You guys got—I know Steve, you follow it. Nate, you got to follow a guy on Twitter, Super 70 Sports. Oh my god, he is awesome. He's like old school. He takes pictures, you know, when managers smoked in the dugout and guys had big beards and you know, wore cool outfits. And Dave Parker had I got to find it. Dave Parker, he always plays, posts this picture. Dave Parker's got this T-shirt on and this awesome, like, Walt Clyde Frazier hat with a feather sticking out of it. And I think it's, like, Cobra's Boogie Woogie something. I don't know. It's, like, something you'd wear in, like, Mid-Atlantic. It's a tremendous T-shirt. But anyway, at Super 70 Sports, you got to follow him on Twitter. He's absolutely awesome. You know, back when he says pitchers need to throw 300 innings and, you know, pitchers are pussies now and the same kind of stuff. He's one of those kind of guys. Best, but Steve, you should like him. He's a Chicago guy. You can't say a bad thing about Ernie Banks. You can't say a bad thing about Ryan Sandberg. You can't say a bad thing about Dick Allen.
Mm-hmm.
You most certainly do not say a bad thing about Walter Payton. That's sacrilege in his eyes. I think Tony Esposito, you know, all those guys. Chris Chelios. He loves Chris Chelios.
Yeah, his chili.
So anyway, guys, we got a fun month of wrestling ahead. This is our only show this month. We're gonna I think we deserve, in the immortal words of Shawn Michaels to Sid, on the Raw the night after WrestleMania 11. I think we all deserve the month off. So we are going to get, you don't give me the month off. And I think we're much deserving of it. So, three big pay-per-views coming up from three different promotions. The first one we'll talk about is this Saturday, and then next Saturday, or next weekend, I should say, there's a big show on Saturday and a big show on Sunday. By the way, coming up in the second segment, the B block, we are finally going to do the newest installment of the New Japan Classic Match Picks. I had the shoe, and I decided, because when I was doing, when I was putting together my match list, the GWWE, of course, greatest TV matches ever. For if you're doing a ballot, we'll talk more about it during the beginning of the B block, but get your ballot in. You've got, if you're listening to this on the day that it's posting, you have 25 days to get your ballot in. So I was talking about great trilogies because I was trying to figure out, guys, of the three great matches between Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano, which one, because I couldn't put all three. I just didn't have any room. Which of the three I would keep? There's the one, the unsanctioned one, which was in New Orleans. Then they had the, the street fight in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And then they had the third one. I don't know what the hell the stip was. Last Man Standing in, where the hell was that? Brooklyn? Brooklyn 3, I think. So I decided, guys, to find a trilogy of matches involving two epic New Japan stars of the mid-1980s, early 1980s. So we will talk about that in the B block. Three matches that took place in 1983 between two arguably of the greatest wrestlers ever. One of them is in the WWE Hall of Fame. Mm. So there's a hint, listeners, of who one of the two guys are. So we'll talk more about that in the B block. All right, guys. Let us talk about... Oh, and Finn Balor just came in and cleaned out... Oh, he's beating the shit out of... Okay, well, obviously he's beating the hell out of... he's giving Ciampa his new... whatever he calls that, DDT now. Is that replacing the coup de grace, that DDT?
Yeah, that's the Sunday Bloody Sunday, I think.
Yes.
That he did. Yeah. Well, he did that... Yeah, he did it in Japan, but he did it in WWE a bit as well.
Oh, what a moment. Finn started doing the what a camera angle. Finn started doing the bullet thing, and mm-hmm. Keith Lee just kind of lifted up from behind him almost like a god. Oh, it was so great just now. And then Keith Lee just fucking pummeled him with a power. I love Keith Lee.
Yeah, he's great.
What a hoss. You know, Peter Winston's right. Adam Cole has no biceps. My God. And I like Adam Cole, baby, but the bees in Bebe are bigger than his arms. Oh, and he got the pin. Baby fade. Keith Lee just dropped Cole. Are we looking at a possible new number one contender, gentlemen, for the NXT Championship?
I think so. I mean, especially considering the weekend that he had, Survivor Series weekend, and the reports that Vince was pretty high on the guy. Like, I think they're going to strap the rocket to Keith Lee, and hopefully they know which direction to point the rocket and how to guide the rocket.
Yeah.
but I think he's going to get the rocket.
Yeah, I think so too. He's got to get a cool t-shirt.
He can get people to chant his name just by standing and smirking, and that is an incredible talent to have. He was over just standing in the cage at TakeOver.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
He's a big, lovable dude.
And I'm asking a serious question here, Nate. I'm not busting balls because I like making fun of your boy, but is he better than Bob Sapp?
He is the best version of Bob Sapp. He is Earth 2 Bob Sapp.
Oh, yes, Earth 2. That's
Earth
right.
Earth 2 Bob Sapp, yes.
Yes, he's the one the monitor wants us to keep.
Yes.
All right, so this weekend, gentlemen, is one of the three big pay-per-views in the month of December around the various wrestling worlds. It is Impact Wrestling's No Surrender has returned. It is a combo pay-per-view with another local promotion, The Wrestling Revolver.
Oh, okay.
And this Saturday from the Brightside Music and Event Venue in Dayton, Ohio. So I wonder if this will be a lot like, what was it, Turning Point, which was live from that Catholic school in King of Prussia, wherever the heck it was. Actually, I could click on it right here. Where was Turning Point? Turning Point was at Holy Family Academy in Hazleton, Pennsylvania. Oh, that's right, Brother Nate, because our boy retained the PPW title. Clutch Adams, baby.
Clutch Adams.
The Clutch. That's our guy, Steve. Clutch Adams, baby.
Clutch Adams.
Yes, that's your goal for next year, Steve, for 2020. If you can get Clutch Adams, because Scotty and I, we're too abrasive to book against the caliber of Clutch Adams. We need somebody with that soothing voice that can talk to Clutch Adams in his soul and get him to come on the main event.
Clutch Adams. Yes. I will work on Clutch it.
Yes. So that was the last show. They were in, yes, it was Holy Family Academy in Hazleton, Pennsylvania. Well, this time they are at the Brightside Music and Event Venue in Dayton, Ohio. All right, just a quick recap. We did this, Nate and I did this last month, Steve. We're going to go back in time a little bit because you are our TNA guru. We'll get to these pay-per-views eventually, I assume. Let's go back in time to past No Surrenders. The first No Surrender took place on July 17th, 2005, at the Impact Zone. Your main event was what we did, Steve, is we checked the main event and then whatever the X Division match was, because that usually means that was the best match of the card. Your main event, Raven, defeated Abyss in a dog collar match to retain the NWA World Heavyweight title. I couldn't imagine that being good whatsoever. However, Christopher Daniels was your X Division champion, and he defeated Petey Williams, so I'm sure that match is pretty good. Anything else here of note? Oh, Sanjay Dutt defeated Elix Skipper, Mikey Batts, and Shark Boy in a four-way to qualify for the Super X Cup tournament.
I do not know what a Mikey Batts is.
I don't either. There is a link for him, but... So.
Yeah, that was when they were still kind of cycling out of the like the guys from the NWA territories. And I think Batts was either a guy from like whatever the NWA Georgia territory was or the NWA Florida territory was, because they used those guys a lot just to kind of fill out the card, because I'm sure Dixie paid them on the cheap.
Yeah, that's for sure.
It's like, why pay for somebody with the the caliber of Clutch Adams when I can get Mikey Batts? Pennies on a dollar.
The following year, No Surrender took place on September 24th, 2006 from Impact Zone. Your main event, Samoa Joe defeated Jeff Jarrett in a Fans Revenge Lumberjack match.
Oh, is that the one that the fans were the actual lumberjacks and they had like belts and stuff?
18 audience members equipped with leather straps. Yeah, no problems there. The X Division title match was Senshi and Chris Sabin.
Okay.
Senshi, of course, is Loki. And he defeated Chris Sabin. The following year, September 9th, 2007, at the Impact Zone, the main event, Kurt Angle defeated Abyss by submission for the world title. He was champion to retain it. The X Division title match, oh, Kurt had both belts. Strange. But he lost to Jay Lethal earlier in the night. So Kurt had both belts going into this show. Very interesting. Very interesting. In fact, I think Kurt wrestled three times. Wait, Kurt Angle. Yeah, Kurt had all three belts. Okay, can't wait till we get to that. He lost the tag titles with Sting to, yes.
Ah.
You know who I'm talking about. Team Pac-Man. Yes, folks, Pac-Man Jones did have a belt in TNA. Okay, Steve can't wait for that one.
yeah, because this would have been Main Event Mafia time.
Yeah. The following year, September 14th, 2008, from the General Motors Center in Oshawa, Ontario.
Hello.
There's a hopping metropolis. Your main event, Samoa Joe defeated Christian Cage and Kurt Angle in a Three Ways to Glory match to retain his world title. And then the X Division title match saw Sheik Abdul Bashir, who of course is Daivari, defeating Consequences Creed, we know who that is, and Petey Williams in a three-way for the X Division title. Petey Williams' manager was Raka Khan.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And of course, she wrestled in WWE under the name Trinesha. So she was in the 2005 Diva Search, too. Interesting. So there you go. Consequences Creed. For those that don't know, Consequences Creed is Xavier Woods. For those that don't know.
Raka Khan.
2009's No Surrender took place in September back at the Impact Zone. The main event, AJ Styles defeated Hernandez, Kurt Angle, Matt Morgan, and Sting in a five-way dance for the world title. Kurt was the champion. AJ won the belt. It was Hernandez's Feast or Fired world title match. So,
yeah, I remember that being a pretty solid match.
It seems like it would be. In the X Division title match, Samoa Joe defeated Daniels by submission.
They sense a pattern.
Yes. 2010, at back at the Impact Zone, the main event, Mr. Anderson defeated D'Angelo De Niro in a semifinals of the NWA of the TNA World Heavyweight Title Tournament. And the X Division title match saw Douglas Williams, who, of course, is Douglas Williams, defeated Sabu to retain the title. So, No Surrender 2011 took place once again in September from the Impact Zone. The main event, Kurt Angle was champion, and he retained the title in a three-way dance against Mr. Anderson and Sting. And the X Division title match was Austin Aries defeated the champion, Brian Kendrick. Not bad there. 2012 took place on September 9th at the Impact Zone. The main event, Jeff Hardy defeated Bully Ray to win the 2012 Bound for Glory series. And in the X Division title match, Zema Ion defeated Sanjay Dutt. And of course, Zema Ion was DJZ. Also DJZ. So, and he defeated Sanjay Dutt. We all know, and of course, Sanjay Dutt. He's a producer in WWE. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Good for him. 2013, which was the last, I think this was the last pay-per-view. No, this was the first one that was part of TNA's weekly shows. This was not a pay-per-view. It took place at the Chai Fetz Arena in St. Louis, Missouri. That's where the University of St. Louis plays, I think, or St. Louis University. The main event, it was the Bound for Glory series final. AJ Styles defeated Magnus. And Bully Ray defeated Mr. Anderson in a last man standing match for the TNA world title. Then in 2014, which was also an Impact show, Lashley defeated Bobby Roode. I guess I could do that now. Lashley was champion, so he retained his TNA world title. And Samoa Joe successfully defended the X Division title against Homicide. That was at the Grand Ballroom in New York City. And then the final No Surrender before this one was in the Impact Zone in 2015. EC3 defeated Matt Hardy in a Full Metal Mayhem match to retain his TNA world title, and there was no X Division title. So it looks like there were some decent matches back in the day, here and there. No Surrender eventually would have like the cool like Captain America logo. So let us dive in, guys, and talk about this weekend's No Surrender in Dayton. Pretty loaded card, guys. 7 matches. Michael Elgin will take on Larry D, who doesn't have a link, so he must be one of those Wrestling Revolver guys. he's a shell of Clutch Adams, though, Nate. I mean, seriously.
No Clutch Adams.
Yeah. Well, he looks like he's about 3 Clutch Adams.
Oh, really?
The size of him.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Poor Michael.
He looks like he has a tattoo that says Carter across right below his neck. It could say garter, but it looks like Carter. So
Could say garlic like bread.
Maybe he's related to Dixie.
Yep. That's his D. That's Larry Dixie.
Larry Dixie. Madison Rain will take on Rosemary.
Ah, yes. Larry is the, it looks like he's the champion of the promotion.
Oh, so he is their Clutch Adams. Doesn't mean he's as good as Clutch Adams. But.
Yeah, I'm looking at their title holders right now. Yeah, the Revolver champion is Larry D. The tag champions are the North, who actually wrestle for Impact. And the open invite scramble champion is the Man Scout Jake Manning, who I have a soft spot for that dude. Like he's wrestled a lot in Virginia, and the gimmick is just ridiculous. Like he's a good worker.
That's funny.
It looks like Larry D's the only guy getting a gig on this show, though.
Yeah, no, the rest are all. It looks like the rest are all. I don't even think North is wrestling.
They added one more. It looks like I'm right on the Impact site, and Trey Miguel from the Rascals will be against Tyler Matrix. He's the Blue Pill, and Logan James.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have that match.
Yeah, they must have just added it because it's not on the wiki yet.
It's not on the wiki, no. Look at that. Breaking news from Steve.
Breaking news, yep.
While the connection's still on.
Yeah, let's not jinx it.
Yeah, let's not do that. Look at that. I did my one match. Madison Rain takes on Rosemary. Speaking of the Rascals, Dez and Wentz, they're in a triple threat tag team match against OVE, the Crists, and the Desi Hit Squad, which is Rohit Raju and Mahabali Shera. There is a fatal five-way match. I don't know what this is for. I don't know if it's a number one contender match or whatever, but it's Madman Fulton, Brian Cage, the former champion, Moose, AC Romero, and your boy Nate Willie Mack.
They're calling it a hoss fight scramble.
I was going to say, that's a lot of meat in that match.
Yeah, we're definitely at the butcher shop for that one.
And Willie Mack might be the smallest guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, Willie Mack is the cruiserweight in this one.
Yeah. I'm guessing, I'd like to see Moose win that because I think Moose is due for like a number one contender slot. So, although, I don't know, he's a heel and Sammy, I don't know. Ace Austin will take on Eddie Edwards in a tables match because apparently Ace Austin is stalking Eddie Edwards' wife. That's that storyline.
Yes, as well as Trey Miguel's mom.
Yes, I saw that.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Not picky.
Austin is coming for some female in your family.
Yes.
Might be your mom, your sister, your wife.
It could be your auntie.
Judy Bagwell. Taya Valkyrie will be defending the Knockouts title against Havoc. Although Taya Valkyrie, I don't know how long she's going to stick around since her husband's wrestling somewhere else. Eventually. And in the main event, Sami Callihan will defend the Impact World title against Rich Swann,
aka Pizza Delivery Pete.
What do you think of this card, Nate?
I think it's actually a pretty solid card. It certainly feels like a much more full-fledged Impact card than the last show, which kind of felt, you know, I like that they're kind of teaming with these smaller promotions to give some of these performers some shine and give the companies some shine. But this one certainly feels much more like an Impact-level show as compared to the last one. And I think it's going to come across really well. Like, I think the issue with Impact is not the talent or the level of quality of these shows. It's finding a lane in this crowded marketplace right now in wrestling, like where they have to battle for eyeballs with NXT and the main roster WWE and AEW and NWA to a certain extent. So I think it's a good show. I don't know if it'll be a well-watched show, but, you know, they can't control that. All they can do is put on the best card they can.
Well, it is free. Well, not free, but it's on Impact Plus. So what do you think of the card, Steve?
It's not bad. It's like it's a good kind of holder card, I think, in between Bound for Glory, and you know I want to say it, Hard to Kill.
Yeah, Take It to the Bank, the blood
which
bank.
Is, you know, the prelude to Under Siege.
Out for Justice. And every other awesome Steven Seagal movie before he, you know, looked like Larry D.
Maybe it is Steven Seagal, and that's the yes. big swerve. Larry D
yes.
is Steven Seagal. He's going to show up at Hard to Kill to challenge Tessa for the world title after she beats Sami Callihan.
That's something we got to talk about in 2020. The whole thing about Tessa and holding it, you know, the main world title. But that's another conversation. But yeah, overall, Steve, I think it's a pretty solid card.
I think Callihan versus Swan will be great. The Haas fight's going to be a lot of fun. I'm a big Havoc fan, so that will, and always up to see the Rascals. Because they're rapscallions, those Rascals.
They are.
Not sure. I haven't watched much of Eddie Edwards lately. He's not the Eddie, kind of the hardcore character. It hasn't really grown on me yet, but that's because maybe I remember him as like the clean old ROH babyface Eddie Edwards.
Yeah. I agree. But this is solid enough. I think Sammy has earned his spot as champion. Mm-hmm. And we know Rich Swann's a good worker, so I think that match will be solid. Kind of digging Madison Rain and Rosemary. I like Rosemary.
Yeah.
We need more Rosemary's in WWE.
Yeah, that's a fun little women's match right there. And I think, you know, Steve mentioned that the title match with Taya and Havoc should be fun because I tend to agree with Scotty. I think when her deal is up, she'll probably be heading, I would say north, but since they're based out of Canada now, she'll be heading south.
Correct. Yes.
To follow her husband.
Yes. And
hop on the Erie Canal and
go by Jordan's house. And
looking at this, like,
Steve.
It feels like Impact's Knockouts division has better characters than WWE's Women's division. Mm. Like, they actually have characters, whereas WWE's roster is more like, okay, here's Becky Lynch. She's tough. Charlotte Flair. You know, they're not real characters. They're exceptional wrestlers,
but there's stuff to them. It's just them. Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah, Jordan Grace is like the strong woman. Havoc's the monster. Madison Rain's like, you know, the queen. Rosemary's psycho. Yeah, it's just a little bit more. Like, you can get into them, I think, a little bit more than, okay, these are really good workers.
And that's not even counting, you know, somebody like a Tessa Blanchard or counting somebody like Taya, who I think has done a really good job as champion.
Mm-hmm.
Her and Johnny Bravo.
Yes. Yes. He will not be Johnny Bravo where he's going next, though. No. I'm parking the car for a minute because I have to say this. If you put on FS2, Mr. Willie. What the fuck is Marquette wearing tonight?
Is Marcus going off or?
You're playing Jacksonville and you're up by 20, so that doesn't matter.
That's good.
But you're wearing these weird, like, gray with bland yellow. I don't know what the fuck. They look like intramural. Although Jacksonville's don't look much better, but.
So that must be their. That's their fourth different uniform.
Well, they look like four games.
I mean, that's what happens when you're sponsored by Nike's Jordan label.
Yep. Yes. You got to sell this merchandise.
Yep.
And give none of it to the kids.
And give none of it to Marcus. Yep.
and they all look like Oregon could wear them too.
Yep.
Do you think Rich Swann has a chance, Nate?
If not for the Tessa match that's hanging out there, I would certainly say so, because they have had some great matches. They had a feud earlier this year that went pretty well, but ultimately Tessa's the end game, you know, so I don't think they would make the mistake of switching the title and then switching it back to Sammy so he could lose it again to Tessa, because that's what they did when they were building up the AJ Styles story to face Bully Ray with Aces and Eight, and they gave the title to Saban, which was a cool match, but it ultimately ended up hurting the AJ storyline, which was the main story.
It almost felt like a second they were going to do that with Brian Cage too until the access started.
I can't believe that Tess is only 24. She seems much older. Not like her looks. She's gorgeous. But just the way she carries herself, she seems like somebody that's in her early 30s and not just 24 years old. It's crazy.
I mean, you could make the argument, and granted it's not a direct comparison, but I would say at this stage of her career, she's a more polished performer than somebody like Charlotte was at the same age.
What do you think of that statement, Steve?
Yeah, when Charlotte first came up, when she was in NXT, and gosh, I probably talked about this years ago on the show, she was ridiculously athletic, but not that great with her placement in the ring. I would remember she would do that natural selection, and then she'd end up hitting her legs on the ropes, you know, on her finishing move. And she's one of the best workers there are now, and always had a huge athletic potential. But yeah, Tessa more well-rounded, and obviously she's going for the main title in Impact at just 24 years old.
In the immortal words of Steve Austin, she was green as grass. She says like a zillion times. So I think it's gonna be a fun show, and maybe I'll check out maybe I'll pop it on Saturday. I got nothing going on. Maybe I'll throw it on because I have Impact Plus. Impact Plus, by the way, for those that don't know, is only like $7 a month. Not a bad investment if you're watching a lot of stuff.
Yeah, Loki, like, it's a really well designed app that I don't think anybody gives it credit for. Like, New Japan World is great, but comparing the user interface between Impact Plus and New Japan, it's night and day.
Yeah, there's no contest with that. It's real. You know, I would even say it's easier to use than the network, the WWE network is now.
I'm not a big fan of the – I don't mind – I like the big font and the big block letters on the WWE network, but it's not as easy. It's not as fun to maneuver as it was.
Yeah.
And New Japan is ugly. New Japan needs to work on that because that's ugly. The content is fucking killer. I mean, all three of us know that. But yeah, the interface on the New Japan app is atrocious.
We gotta get Kevin back on. We gotta get him to get his Compaq computer out. learn some C++. Some basic.
Because New Japan World right now looks C++ and basic.
Yeah.
Yes, pretty much. Wow. Look at this line. Artis Gilmore. One of your boys, Steve, play for the Bulls.
Yeah, double O.
Senior year at Jacksonville, 1969-70. He averaged for the season 24 points and 23 rebounds.
Jeez.
And of course, Jacksonville made it to the national championship, I think, that year. But of course, Jacksonville was not going to beat the machine that was the Bruins of UCLA. Which, by the way, was the first, and that was one of the in-between years. That was like the couple of years between when Kareem graduated and when Walton came in, and they still couldn't touch him. So check out No Surrender. It's this Saturday. It's on Impact Plus. To recap the card quickly, Michael Elgin and Larry D, who was the Wrestling Revolver champion. Madison Rayne will take on Rosemary. In a triple threat tag, the Desi Hit Squad will face OVE and the Rascals. Madman Fulton, Brian Cage, Moose, AC Romero, and Willie Mack in a fatal five-way. What's the nickname of that again, Steve?
The Hoss Fight Five-Way Scramble.
Scramble. Is it for a number one contender slot? Probably not, right?
No, it didn't say anything. Yeah.
All right. Ace Austin takes on Eddie Edwards in a tables match. Taya Valkyrie will defend the knockout title against Havoc. And in the main event, Sami Callihan will defend the Impact World title against Rich Swann. So check that out on Saturday. Then next Saturday, the 14th, a show that I purchased with my own money. And I'm kind of pumped about it. Saturday night, December 14th, from the GPB Studios in Atlanta, Georgia, the NWA brings you Into The Fire. Based on, of course, the awesome song by Dokken, which is also the theme song for NWA Power. So the NWA, after, and this is their first standalone show since kind of Billy Corgan rebooted. They did the 70th anniversary show, but they kind of worked with other indie promotions because they wanted to get the belt off Cody, obviously. And then New Year's Clash and the Crockett Cup were combos with Ring of Honor, who certainly needed it. So NWA, standing alone, is having their big pay-per-view next Saturday, the 14th of January. Oh, January, of December. And if you order, I sound like I work for NWA. Maybe I replaced Cornette.
be a better choice.
Yes,
I think all of us could do well. I think Billy should hire all of us.
But would we get a touching tribute on the next week's show after we got kicked to the curb?
Yes. I will remember.
That was hilarious. Like the way the music they played, you would think that Jim Cornette was in the hospital.
Yeah.
Like, we just want to thank Jim Cornette for his service. Hang in there, Corny. We're pulling for you.
We publicly apologize to all Ethiopians.
That apology took a lot out of you.
Yeah.
He hasn't used those muscles in years.
Maybe that's where Sally Struthers is with the real roll.
He threw his back out apologizing.
Yeah. So the new guy's name is Stu Bennett. Apparently that's the new guy.
Yes.
Yeah, you know who that is.
You know who Stu is, though.
I haven't watched this week's Power, so I have no idea.
Well, Steve, do you want to tell him the bad news?
let me get on my my big podium here. It's Wade Barrett.
Oh. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's... Is that his real name? Oh, that
is
his real name.
Yeah.
Oh,
if you wanna watch a show with Stu Bennett and CM Punk, there is on Netflix. Oh God, I'm not gonna be able to remember the name. It's like an American Ninja War. Oh, the Ultimate Beastmaster. Mm. It is like American Ninja Warrior, but like on a soundstage at Universal Studios, and they had 10 different countries announcing simultaneously. And CM Punk is the American broadcaster, and Stu Bennett is the English broadcaster. Huh. And I think Anderson Silva is one of the Brazilian. It's just...
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Is it, who's Tiki Barber's? What's his brother's name?
Rondé?
Yeah, maybe it's Tiki himself is with CM Punk.
If it's an NBC property, Tiki's with CBS now, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was with
Tiki's
NBC.
Tiki and Tierney.
Yeah, he was with NBC Tiki's until he ran his mouth.
No, he's on CBS. He does Tiki and Tierney. He does the afternoon show on CBS Sports Radio.
Yes. Yep. And every night he goes to bed cursing Michael Strahan for living the life he should have had.
Yep. Team was not good enough.
Tiki.
So, all right. Well, if it's Wade Barrett, then I'm kind of pumped. Anyway, here is the card. Six matches. Here is the card for next Saturday, the 14th, NWA Into the Fire. Finally, they announced it. The Rock and Roll Express are your NWA World Tag Team Champions. They finally aired that episode this week after they technically won the belts like it felt like 10 years ago. But the Wild Cards, Thomas Latimer and Royce Isaacs, get their rematch. And I have a feeling the Wild Cards are going to win. I think this was just a cheap pop thing for the Rock and Roll Express.
Yeah.
Colt Cabana will defend the NWA National Heavyweight title against both Aaron Stevens, we know who that is, silence, and Ricky Starks, who's actually a pretty good worker. I don't know if you guys seen it. Ricky Starks is very good. Eli Drake, who I'm kind of digging in NWA, taking on Mr. Anderson, Kenny Anderson. Allison Kay, who is the NWA Women's Champion, and Ashley Vox will take on Melina Thunder Rosa, who's NWA's version of Rosemary, or Marty Bell. That they're like a little click there. So one of two of those three, they're going to do like the free birdette rule. So, question mark. It's my guy. Love question mark. It's kind of like who. Because he's about the same. He's got his guts about the same size as Jim Neidhart was.
I mean, he's let himself go since he left the Mysterians.
Exactly. Yes.
instead of 96 tears, it's 96 beers.
Yeah. It's like a 96-inch waist. Taking on another guy who's got a 96-inch waist.
That is a deep old man cut.
Oof, yes.
we are all showing our age.
Exactly. Wow, there was some girth in that match. Oof. And in the
main event, might be another Haas. What do you call it, Steve? A Haas scramble?
A Haas fights five-man scramble. Only the two men are bat percentage is greater than the five-man combined.
They equal five.
Yeah.
And in the main event, in a 2 out of 3 falls match for the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship, Nick Aldis will defend against James Storm. Brian Hebner will be the referee for the first fall, while Tim Storm, the former world champion, will be the referee for the next two falls. Well, second fall, and if necessary, the third fall. So 6 matches. It's a 6:05 start time next Saturday, the 14th. I got to say, guys, I'm legitimately excited. I think it's a big deal for NWA. Big pay-per-view. It's only $20. On Fight TV, if you order it by tomorrow, the 7th, after that, it's only $25. That's still a great price. I'm telling you, I'm sorry. I feel less guilty spending $25 for the NWA show than $50 for an AEW show.
I can understand. I mean, yeah, we've talked. $50 is a lot to spend.
Yeah.
We went old school, and I had a friend who hosted a get-together for the AEW show. So it's a lot better, like throwing in $10-$15 to the pool and supposed to throwing down $50 on your own.
Exactly. I agree 100%.
I have no problem dropping $20 for a pay-per-view to watch by myself.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think going with the lower price point also eliminates another problem. One of the small issues I've had with AEW, and we talked about it when the Cracker Barrel gang reunited for the last show, Scotty.
Yes, sir.
Is that when you do a $50 show, you feel like you have to give people their money's worth, and sometimes that leads to an overstuffed card.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whereas with a $20-$25 show, you can get away with 6 matches if they're really strong matches, and you don't feel like, okay, these people are paying this much money, we've got to give them a 10-15 match card, because nobody wants to sit through that. Even if it's good wrestling, it's too much wrestling.
Exactly. Well, we talked about that, but this is a nice, tidy 6-match show.
Yep.
And I mean, Impact this weekend is a 7-match show, nice and tidy, and that's fine. Sometimes too much is too much. So I'm legitimately excited to see NWA on their own stage, come up with a big time show. I hope they do the Crockett Cup every June. But they're going to have to combo with somebody because the Crockett Cup's going to be way too big and their roster's not quite big enough yet. Question, Steve, who is number 31 Ellis for Marquette, whose number was retired and played in the early 80s? Oh, Bo Ellis.
Ellis, yep. And I heard that Doc Rivers is there tonight as well.
Ah. Is this the building where the Bucks play, Fizer?
Yeah, it's
a weird looking fucking Noah's Ark thing, right?
Yeah, it's much nicer than the Bradley Center. It has like 3,000 less seats, but they actually are good seats instead of like your 80s stadium where you walk straight up a 90 degree angle up the stairs. It feels like
the Mecca's knocked down, right?
It's been remodeled, and I think the UW Milwaukee Panthers play there. It's not really used.
I think the NWA should do a show there. That'd be kind of cool. I don't know, guys. This is a promotion that I'm looking forward to talking about in 2020. I don't know. I just have a soft spot for Billy and for Dave Lagana. They seem like they're really working hard to push this. And, of course, they have that new show, Circle Squared. Or is that what it is? Circle Squared. Where guys practice their promo skills. Okay. How about that, huh? What a concept. Practice your promo skills. Then you don't have to try to memorize them and sound like crap like you do in WWE. which is a huge problem in that company. I had a long Dr. G and I, while we were watching Full Gear, and actually, we were watching both NXT and Survivor Series 2, had a long talk about doing promos and how a lot of guys in the company suck at it because they're not good at memorization. Well, I guess if you didn't have to, you'd be fine. How big of a show you think importance? What's that, Steve?
I was going to say we might want to cover a company that we might not be talking about in 2020 after we're done in
Ring of Honor. Yes, we'll get to ROH in a sec. I just wanted to ask you one question, guys, on the side. How big a show is this for NWA, though? It's a standalone. You know, they're not getting help from ROH. ROH can't give any help right now. You know, they're not leaning on anybody. How big, Steve, is this for the NWA to kind of, for Billy Corgan to kind of do this on his own?
I think it's big that you, it's big enough because you need some income. You only have, you know, the YouTube's views are only going to get you so much, and they're not a touring company right now.
Nope.
So, you know, they're going to need to get some buys on this to be able to, you know, pay people going forward. It helps that they have a really, really small roster right now. So you know, you only have a couple guys you got to pay up top. You're like your James Storms, your Nick Aldis's, your Cabanas. And after that, you know, you're not going to have to, you know, put so much money out. I mean, Rock and Roll Express, you can probably give them $100 and let them sell some 8x10s, brother.
Brother.
So, well,
you gotta hear that sec.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're not going to do like 10,000 buys or anything like that. But, you know, if they can get a couple thousand, that at least brings something in.
Mm. What do you think, Nate?
Yeah, I think it's important not only financially for, you know, the reasons Steve alluded to, but also in terms of momentum. Like, they're in a similar situation to Impact, where they are at best a distant third behind WWE and AEW. And so you have to kind of find your lane, find your niche, find your audience. And so I think this is going to be an important show because they do have a lot of goodwill, even though I think they fumbled a bit of it with the Cornette situation, where it's like they made it a bigger deal than it needed to be because of the way they handled it. Mm-hmm. And so I think this is going to be a good show, though. And one of the strongest points about NWA up to this point has been the roster, the mix of veterans and guys we've seen before in TNA and in the WWE and in ROH, and then the up and comers, and also that, you know, just giving these people time to become characters and giving them promo time. And so I think this is going to be a strong card. I think, you know, we talked about Tessa earlier. I think Allison Kay is somebody who is going to be somebody that people take notice of in 2020 if they haven't already. Because mm-hmm. she's really good in this role as the top female in the company. Nick Aldis, like, I think Nick Aldis is fantastic. James Storm, I've been a James Storm fan since he had that terrible soul patch back when he was teaming with Chris Harris on those NWA shows we've reviewed already. And Eli Drake is somebody who I think, even though Impact does a great job of utilizing their talent, I don't think they maximized what they could have done with Eli Drake. So I think he's a good fit here. And I think Wade Barrett on commentary will be kind of fun. Like, if this is a throwback promotion, he can be kind of the modern-day version of a Lord Alfred Hayes. Like that European dude that is just snobby and arrogant, but he's also funny. And you like listening to them. So I think they've got a lot of things going for them. Like Steve said, though, I don't think this is going to be a show where they get a ridiculous amount of buys. But hopefully it's enough to keep them on the radar, enough to have them keep pace with, you know, Impact and to a lesser extent, again, ROH. Because I think ROH is going to end up being the big loser next year as these companies kind of jockey for position. I'm still on the fence whether I'm going to watch it the night of or whether I'm going to catch it later on in the week, but I'll certainly be watching it.
Mm. I'm actually going to watch it live. And at the moment, we are scheduled to have a main event reaction show that evening. Myself and the doctor, Dr. G. George Urbelino, will be joining me. And we will be talking Into the Fire reaction. So that'll be up that following morning, which will get you ready for the next day, Sunday, December 15th.
13th.
From the Tulkey from the Target Center in Minneapolis, TLC. And and right now we have no card yet, of course, but there will be something. And then after that, guys, in the month, well, that's not until January, but there's actually already, there's already a card set. I'm looking ahead here, guys. January 12th, UK TakeOver Blackpool 2 is happening, and the card's already set. Talk about looking ahead. Tyler Bate will be taking on Jordan Devlin, a.k.a. Mini Finn. Trent Seven will take on Eddie Dennis. Kaylee Ray will defend the UK women's title against Tony Storm and Piper Niven. Gallus, the tag team champions, Mark Coffey and Wolfgang, will defend against Imperium and Grizzled Young Veterans and Mark Andrews and Flash Morgan Webster in a fatal four-way team ladder match.
Ooh.
And in the main event, Walter, my man Walter, will defend the UK title against Joe Coffey. I love Walter. He's another guy, Nate, like your boy Keith Lee, that like gained a little shine over the last few weeks, you know?
Yeah, I like Walter a lot. Like, in fact, I'm not a regular viewer of NXT UK. In fact, like the only two people on that brand that regularly draw my attention are Walter and Jenny, because I think both of them are great in their own ways. And we saw Walter at Survivor Series. I didn't like the way he was he was handled.
That was a mistake.
Was terrible
on that show. But I would hope that when he eventually does kind of make that transition, that they treat the guy with care, because he is certainly somebody who you would think you could build up for a larger match. Like Keith Lee and or Walter would be great opponents for Brock Lesnar if they bring those guys up the right way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what do you think, Steve?
Well, Walter is a favorite in our house, so much so that if you turn the corner and there's an 8-year-old there, prepare to get not an overhand chop, but that forearm chop that Walter does. Good God. Happens on a daily basis. Just all of a sudden comes up to, hey, Dad.
Funk.
Yeah, my boy's got a Walter shirt. Probably the only 8-year-old in America that has a Walter shirt.
That's fantastic. That's the greatest thing I've ever heard.
So
Imperium is like the UK version of Undisputed Era.
He wants Walter to turn on Imperium and join the Undisputed Era. So he's got better takes than most wrestling Twitter.
That is,
I gotta be honest with you.
That is true. I like that take. It's scalding. Scalding. So anyway, that card's not until, we'll talk about that in 2020.
It's just like you said, Nate, it's not something that I watch. There's just not enough time. I would probably enjoy it. I love Walter. I love Tyler Bate and Trent Seven. There's just a lot of the big English guys I just don't know, just for lack of time. So I have nothing against it all. I just don't have the time. Something's got
to
go.
There's only so much wrestling to watch, mm-hmm. you know? By the way, your boy Marcus isn't playing tonight, Nate. Steve, he's in street clothes.
No, oh, wow.
He's in street clothes. Well, you're only playing, and you're up by 19 with 5:45 left, so he probably didn't need to play. Ring of Honor. Shall I pull the ripcord for you, Steve?
I got it. Yep. You guys can mute your mic for a while. You can put like the Scorched Earth music underneath this.
This will. Yeah, I got to find it. You know, like the old Armageddon music.
Yes.
I don't know what that is. We'll have to look up what that is so I can play it underneath when I edit this. Okay. Here's what I'm thinking. Why don't we end the A block, Steve, with hashtag Dark Steve.
Okay. So Final Battle, December 13th, 2019. So that is the day after the NWA pay-per-view, coming from Baltimore, Maryland. Final Battle, just like it sounds, usually wraps up some storylines that have been going on for the year. And then they have the taping the next day. And it has been an acrimonious last few months for Ring of Honor that kind of has just reached its nadir over the last couple of weeks. So let's just go through the card. They just announced Angelina Love versus Maria Manic, which will be their women's match that who knows if it will be for the title, because their women's champion, Kelly Klein, is essentially no longer with the company. And that is taking place over social media with Joe Koff versus Joey Mercury, who's leaking all sorts of stuff about the office of Ring of Honor. Kelly Klein had a concussion in England. There allegedly was no medical staff there. It depends on who you're listening to. And basically, Kelly Klein went public about there not being really a concussion protocol, and they are letting her go when her contract is renewed, but she still has a title. So quite the mess over for that. Joy Mercury has talked about going scorched earth just for weeks, writing, how would you say this, Nate? Like, his tweets have like information on the company, the inner workings of management, but they're a little bit unhinged.
Yes. It's like he saw what ACH did a few weeks ago and was like, hold my beer, brother.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very stream of consciousness, sort of a tweet storm, if you will.
Yeah, no punctuation, things spelled wrong, just screenshots of text that he saved with handwritten scribbles using the paint function on them. It's just, yeah, bizarre stuff. That is one aspect of Ring of Honor. So the Ring of Honor is getting a lot of pushback on that. And the Kelly Klein's husband, BJ Whitmer, who used to be one of the bookers or the agents with Ring of Honor, is now with AEW. So, you know, there's that part of the story as well. They have Dan Moff, who just returned after years away from Ring of Honor. He, I believe, was in the first unofficial match on the first card of Ring of Honor. And he's going against Jeff Cobb, and we're not really sure how much longer Jeff Cobb has with the company. And that will be a thing I use for the next probably all matches. Flamita and Bandido. Bandido, big fan of his, but he might be done with the company at the end of January. Versus Villain Enterprises, Marty Scurll, who I believe has already done with his contract as of December 1st, but he's just finishing out these last two shows. He's teaming with Flip Gordon, who I believe is also going to be done with Ring of Honor. Let's see, Shane Taylor for the television champion. He's going against Dragon Lee. A grudge match between the former champ Matt Taven and his ex-partner Vincent. Street fight, Mark Haskins, who I'm really high on too. If you're a guy who didn't get signed by a lot of companies, it was surprising that he never got signed to NXT UK. Just a great worker. And he's going against Bully Ray. Briscoe is for the tag title. They're the champs. They're going against a newly healed Jay Lethal and his Lethalite, Jonathan Gresham. And the world championship match, Roosh versus PCO. A 50-year-old man is getting the big shot against Roosh, but PCO is a big fan favorite. So, not a bad card. The question will be, what is going to happen after this card? Who is going to be staying with the company? Who is going to be leaving? They're already talking about new people making their debut the next day, like former Chikara star Hala Wicked, Ray Horace, who was on Lucha Underground. But they're, guys, they are in trouble. No one is talking about them. We talked a couple episodes ago about how they went from a 6,000 seat stadium where they sold out to the same stadium having 1,000 in the crowd. And, you know, bad business decisions, seemingly an office that is inept. And I've teased this, I think, with you guys off the air, but my personal story with Ring of Honor. So I've I wouldn't say I've been a fan since day one, but like 2003 when their VHS tapes first started going around. And I've been a fan since then. I probably have gone around 25 to 30 shows in my lifetime of Ring of Honor. They a lot of times in Chicago when I lived in Milwaukee, have a whole bunch of shows in Milwaukee, you know, gone to see them in Pittsburgh, New Orleans. You know, we saw a show together in Brooklyn, Scott. And
you did indeed.
Yeah. So I have had the VIP service for a couple of years, which is their streaming service. And a couple months ago, it stopped working. Okay, you know, maybe something's wrong. You know, I went to pop a pay-per-view on, nothing happened. Said I wasn't a subscriber. You know, you look in to the, you know, you go into your options, see your history, and like, no, I paid for it. Paid for it 6 months ago, still got another 6 months to go. So emailed the office, said, hey, guys, you know, just can't sign in. You hear nothing. Heard nothing for 2 weeks. So I find the phone number, call, talk to some guy in the office. Oh, okay, I'll include you on the email. We'll talk to, you know, the people in Ring of Honor IT, which is, you know, probably Charles sitting right next to him. So he sends an email out. The guy says, well, what's the problem? I'm like, well, it's literally in the email. So then I said, here's a problem. Another week goes by, nothing. Email again. Hey, guys, you know, can I, you know, paid for this. Nothing. Another week. Okay, guys, you know, it's about time that you refund my money here. It took 2 months for it to get fixed. So, you know, someone who, you know, I put down, shit, I would guess a couple $1,000 Ring of Honor. You know, that would be my guess, like, you know, $1,500, something about there between, mm-hmm. you know, the old DVD shelf, Scott, and tickets to uh-huh. shows and yep. VIP, you know, subscriptions for the last couple of years, and I'm done. I canceled the service that will run out in February, which I believe which pretty much all of the roster's contracts will run out about that time as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you know, 15 year long fan, you know, pretty much done because as we've been talking about this show, looking at all these other promotions, if you're not going to you know, take care of someone who's one of your best customers, who's like as part of your, you know, VIP program. There's plenty of other companies that are, you know, willing to fight for my dollar. Mm-hmm. So it's not hard at this point to be like, you know what? Yeah, all right, I'm done. And it helps a little bit that, you know, that company that's running them isn't exactly the most honorable, no pun intended there, company themselves. So it makes kind of giving up, it makes it a little better. I don't know. I think they're, if it wasn't for guys like the Briscoes and Jay Lethal, maybe Taven and getting like, I think like New Japan kind of perking them up a little bit helped, you know, losing that relationship, losing the relationship with the AEW guys, and then just seemingly not caring about their fans and taking them for granted. Not a good look. Hmm.
Wow.
Here I am going from Ring of Honor to my new project, which is going to be going through all of Impact for this year at their best matches. Who would have ever thought?
I know, right?
That's Steve Willey in the Impact Zone. He didn't work here.
Oh, my God. Was he on Tough Enough?
Who's that with
I will say, though, Steve. It's I appreciate you letting the listeners know about your story, but it could have been worse. Mm-hmm. Instead of dealing with Charles in the IT department, Bully Ray would have pulled you into the locker room and had a one-on-one conversation with you.
Yes.
Like he did that one fan that spit on Mandy Leon. Yes. Or got spit on. I don't remember who spit.
I think Angelina, his wife, Velvet Sky, probably.
Oh, Velvet spit on the guy, yeah. Yeah.
And then blame the guy. Man,
yeah, that is the other thing about their women's division. Like, came out that Kelly Klein was making $24,000 a year. For Ring of Honor and the way their contracts work, they really, most of them can't work outside dates. Mm. And the other, you know, the other women who are, you know, they're like, you know, Velvet Sky, that's Bully Ray's wife. Mandy Leon, that's Delirious's longtime girlfriend. You know, they ain't making 20 grand.
Nope.
So yeah, it's just bad looks all around. They need they need something coming out of this. I heard that the last pay-per-view did 800 buys for regular pay-per-view. Mm. I don't know why they're running regular pay-per-view in the year 2019. Not sure how much they did on Fight. Clearly, they don't care who does, who watches on their own little streaming service.
Yeah, that's rough.
Yeah,
that's rough. Well, at least we're gonna have a great show this Saturday night in Dayton for Impact No Surrender, and then of course next weekend on Saturday the 14th. Well, let's see, Final Battle is Friday the 13th. Well, that's fitting, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
NWA Into the Fire on Saturday night the 14th, and then Sunday the 15th is WWE's TLC, and then I think we're good for the year. And then the first January 12th will be this UK Takeover Blackpool, and then of course the Royal Rumble will be in Houston, Planet Houston, and we're not sure what AEW plans on doing for their next pay-per-view. They got the Jericho Booze Cruise at the end of January, so that should be
a big cruise guy, and
I love cruises.
Throw nothing but wrestling fans on there.
Yeah, a bunch of wrestling fans with alcohol on a boat.
Yeah, I'd fuck that shit up in a heartbeat. Anyway, great A block, guys. And yeah, so we'll look forward to that. And again, next weekend, join myself and the doctor, Dr. K. Giorgolino, when we have a main event special reaction show for NWA Into the Fire. When we return here on Main Event, we'll go back in time for the newest installment of our New Japan Classic Match Picks. We go back to 1983 for a trilogy of matches involving two arguably of the greatest of all time, wrestling for the WWF Junior Heavyweight Championship. Ooh,
Larry D versus Clutch Adams.
Yes! I'd like to see that, actually. Brother Nate, Brother Steve, Brother Scott, while we clean up Ring of Honor's teeth from the ground after Steve just kicked them through the back of their skull, we'll go to Japan after this.
Because.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place Three Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceThreeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place Three Nations Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these current shows, plus archives of our previous podcasts over the past 8 years, as well by subscribing to our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available at PlaceNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using www.placetobination.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And be sure to join us at our forum at Bigelow34.proboards.com for all sorts of wrestling, sports, and pop culture discussion each and every day, where you can make your voice heard. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceTobination.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
We are back on Place to Be Nation's Main Event episode. 139, and it is great to be back to talk about a trilogy, a trifecta of great New Japan matches. But before we get into any of that, of course, it's the Godfather. We got Scotty here, and much like another famous number 39, we have a man that everywhere he goes, people chant his name, sometimes in a positive fashion, sometimes in a derisive fashion. Wherever this man goes, he hears, Willie, Willie. So I'm sure, Steve Willie, you can empathize with the plight of one Daryl Strawberry.
Yes. Number 18, I used to have his jersey in my closet, Scott Fiscalo.
Yes. I have two. I have two 18s in my closet, but of course, he wore 39 for the Yankees. Those fucking pricks.
The Yankees. If you look at the Yankees 30, like the history of that number, there's some random people that have worn that number.
Mm-hmm.
Like Otis Nixon for a season.
It is. It's like the throwaway number for the wow. cheap free agents.
Like Joe Negro.
Yep. It's crazy. But yes, I did wear. Who was your 39? Oh, Steve, you missed the episode two episodes ago, where we've decided that when we finally fire up the Place to Be Nation store, one of our T-shirts will be a replica of Nate Milton's high school football jersey. Because number one, they were the Monarchs.
Yes, the Mintsville Monarchs.
So they were royalty, and they were purple and gold.
Ah, good colors,
which is kind of badass. So, anyway, so who was 39 on your team? Do you even remember? Was he the punter?
Now, 39 probably would have been a backup fullback / inside linebacker because everybody probably played both ways.
That's right. That's right. Chuck Bednarik's all around. anyway, we got a lot to talk about here in segment in the B block. Great A block, guys. And again, great weekend of wrestling. We got just to recap: No Surrender on Saturday night, and next weekend we have NWA Into the Fire on Saturday, and of course TLC on Sunday. And and Final Battle, which Steve Willie will not pay for on Friday the 13th. So
because it's final pay-per-view.
you'll pay for the pay-per-view, and then they'll give you the pay-per-view in what, May?
So yes. Still drinking a large bottle of water to cool myself down after.
Yes. Throw some on the scorched earth that you that you incinerated. But anyway, we got a lot to discuss here in the B block, because we're going to go back to 1983 for our New Japan Classic match picks. But before we do that, let's plug it up, baby. For the Nate, let's dive into the incredibly awesome Kings of Sport Patreon page. What do you guys got going on?
Yes, the Kings of Sport Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/ the Kings of Sport. Brother Marcus and myself, so many things on the Patreon feed right now. You know, in addition to the Kings of Sport video versions and the classic audio versions, there's also the latest episode of the Chain Reaction featuring myself, Brother Scott, and Brent Chittenden chopping up Survivor Series from a couple weeks ago. There is a new episode of the NWA, Nubian Wrestling Advocates, which will be out either this weekend or sometime early next week, featuring myself, my co-host Chris Ely, and Rich Fan from PW Torch.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So we will be having some good conversations on that. We'll be back with a new episode of Kings of Sport probably sometime this week, because we're getting close to the end of the year. So we'll probably do one more original start to finish episode, and then anything from there on out is going to be best ofs, because that's easy to do, and it's a good way to kill time. And then there's another secret project out there that I might tell Steve and Scotty off air, but the listeners will have to wait, because if this comes to fruition, it could be a nice Christmas present, shall we say, for the audience out there.
Oh, I love that. Is it an egg? Is it an egg that we get to watch on Superstars warble into Chavo or Mondo or whichever Guerrero it was? I don't remember.
I mean, some could say that the program that might may or may not be talked about laid an egg, but I will say no more about it.
I can't wait to get the present from Saint Nate.
Saint Nate, that's right. That's right. Saint Nate and Jesus and Virgil. Kings of Sport Patreon, everybody, kick in a couple bucks. I do. I am a sponsor, and I'm very very happy about it. It's a lot of great content.
That would you dropping some more money on Nate's face.
It's exactly what I'm doing. See, that's what that is. That's another dollar. But Nate, if you want, I'm telling you, we got to scratch each other's back. So if anybody wants me to put another buck in the Patreon, we need Papa Marcus on an episode of the main event. So there we go. All right. Speaking of great shows, let's dive into the two awesome podcast feeds we have here at PlaceBeNation.com. We'll start over on the pop feed. Hard Traveling Fanboys, episode 189, giant-sized edition, the second carefully curated selection of the musical appearances by Jim Ross. No, not that Jim Ross. On the season finale of DC For You, Todd and Russell talk about the things they are thankful for from DC Comics this year and some of the big things they are looking forward to in the coming months in 2020.
It's a good episode.
Is it?
I'm going to butt in a little bit, sorry.
Oh, that's quite all right.
Yeah, I just listened to that this week. It's a really good episode.
Ah, excellent. Check it out. DC For You, Todd and Russell.
You mean comics fans can talk about something without shitting on it?
Yeah, exactly.
What
in all seriousness, that's what I listened, because it's like it was a positive, like, here's all the things we like. Oh,
Earth 77?
Okay.
Earth 77, where Erica Durant is still Lois Lane. Yum. This week in the NFL hits weekly.
And Chloe's not in jail.
Oh. Selling her to other humans.
It got a little too real there, Steve Willie. You know, sometimes you go for the joke and then it gets a little real. Just ask Tim Ryan out in San Francisco.
Oh, God.
I don't know, Brother Nate. I think the Patreon feed deserves a Smallville deep dive.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Love that show. This week in the
NFL. You're joking there, Scotty, but we may have something up over the holidays about the CW crossover.
Well, as we are talking, guys, we're ready to go, because the Sunday, this coming Sunday, both episodes of Supergirl and Batwoman, we fire up, guys. We fire up. So the crisis begins this weekend, if you're listening to this right after it drops on PlaceBeNation.com. So, yes. I'm pumped. I'm very pumped.
I got to watch it. I think I'm going to hop back on with Batwoman. I just picked up the first graphic novel that introduced the character, which is supposed to be amazing. So I think I'm going to read that and then start watching the show concurrently with it.
Yeah. Well, Ruby Rose is fucking awesome as Batwoman. She's incredible.
Yeah, that show has been a pleasant surprise. I was a little nervous about it going into it, but yeah, the Ruby Rose is awesome, and the girl that plays Alice is like, everybody on this show is awesome except for the dad. The dad is kind of a bore.
Really? I like the dad. He reminds me of what's his name? The guy who played the guy in 300.
Oh, did you watch the last episode though? Cuz I liked him in the last episode.
Yes,
so maybe
I did too.
Maybe I just think that the story they had him doing for the first few episodes, they didn't give him a lot to do. And so every time he showed up, it was like, do we really need to spend 5 minutes with you, sir? let's get back to Alice, because that's where the money is.
Yeah, she's awesome. First of all, she's hot. And secondly, she's like psychotic, which is a pretty awesome combo. But Ruby Rose is tremendous as Batwoman. So, yeah, pretty great. Pretty great. So, I was skeptical as well, but not a single one of the universe shows have bothered me this year. Supergirl, sometimes I got to bang my head against a wall because it gets But it hasn't been too bad this year.
Probably had its best season. Black Lightning's always strong. Flash, I really liked Flash, the first half of Flash.
Yes, Flash has been tremendous. This two-parter was really good.
They brought my man in from Heroes. I'm like, yes, give Mohinder a check.
Yeah, I like him. He's awesome. I do like him. And my nickname for Black Lightning is the show is called The Remar, because James Remar is great in fucking everything he does. So, and then I think of when I see Jefferson Pierce, I think he played basketball for Cal U on 90210, baby. So
and he was on Living Single dating Queen Latifah.
That's right. So now we love all five shows are awesome, and I'm looking forward to I call them the Misfits, the Legends of Tomorrow. They're the Misfits, and then they'll fire up too. Anyway, there's a plug for the CW and all their tremendous shows. This Week in the NFL hits weekly. Roger and Johnny recapping the last set of games and previewing the upcoming weekend's batch, including this pile of hot trash that's going on at Soldier Field right now. Well, maybe for me, not for Steve, but this pile of hot trash going on at Soldier Field right now. Siblings Kevin and Mary host the Brother Sister Rewatch podcast on episode 27. They bring you The Office, season 4, episodes 1 and 2. On the newest Diamond Conversations, the 7th episode features longtime Blue Jays announcer Jerry Howarth to discuss his book, Hello Friends, Stories from My Life and Blue Jays Baseball. In a special holiday quickie edition of Laugh in Theater, Andy welcomes Jenny and Miranda to watch A Charlie Brown Thanksgiving, the second of the holiday trilogy. On the Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular, Glenn and Scotty kick off Star Wars month here at PTBN Pop by examining John Williams' scores for the original trilogy, which is arguably some of the greatest movie music you will ever hear in your life. And in the newest special episode of The Great Debate, I was with Andy Atherton, and he was joined by the co-host of the Geeks Who Like Sports podcast, Lee Elias and Ray Carcillo, to debate and celebrate all things Star Wars. So that was a lot of fun. Check that out. While you are at it, subscribe to Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position feed, The New Home of Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, Telling Stories, and much, much more. On our social media pages, the Greatest Sitcom of All Time tournament now underway. We are in the opening play-in round. There'll be 4 matchups per day, so make sure you like our tournament page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter so you won't miss a single one. Guys, I'm going to eschew the matchups. I know we usually do them, but we're still in the play-in rounds, and I don't even know 3/4 of these fucking shows.
So, same.
I think it's a waste of our oxygen. But we get to the good stuff. When we get to the good stuff, Brother Nate, when good times, it has to stare in the Jefferson's face. What are you going to do, my brother? What are you going to do?
I mean, I've enjoyed these play-in matchups so far because, like you said, Scotty, either half of these shows I don't know or I've forgotten about them.
Right. Exactly. Mr. Atherton was looking ahead to me at some of the first rounds, and there's some interesting ditties in that All in the Family, Jefferson's, Good Times bracket. We got a lot of powerhouse matchups.
Shout out to Norman Lear. Norman Lear did work back in the day.
Yes, he did. Did you know, by the way, on a side note, you know how they did that the live thing with All in the Family and the Jeffersons?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're doing it again in January, except this time it's going to be All in the Family and Good Times.
Mm.
So, of course, 2/3 of the cast is dead on Good Times.
It's going to be a short show.
Yeah, except for JJ and Janet. I think the rest of them are dead. Well, we know. Well, no, John Amos isn't dead. Wait, did John Amos die? Oh, no, maybe John Amos didn't die.
No. Everybody thought, see, that's the crazy thing, though. Like, he did such a good job. The show did such a good job. People actually thought John Amos was dead.
Mm-hmm. No, his character died. I think Janet Jackson should come back and play Flo Rida. That's what I think.
Mm.
Anyway, it's produced by Kerry Washington. Of course, she was
incredible. She's amazing.
Amazing Olivia Pope on Scandal, which was such a great fucking show. Anyway, so that's coming up next month. So they're doing that again. Norman Lear, and I'm assuming Kimmel's going to co-host again. So follow us on Facebook, the sitcom tournament. You may be like, what the fuck are all these weird shows? But just buy your time. Vote for them. Buy your time. We will get to the good stuff soon. We promise.
I think the committee slided absolutely fabulous, though. There's some Western bias there.
Yeah, there's definitely some Western bias. You know, I'm a guy who I grew up learning how to read the TV guide in the 80s.
Okay.
Seriously. And a lot of those, like, I'm like, I have no idea. And I'd like to consider myself a pretty good expert of like your 80s, 90s, early 2000s sitcoms. And I'm like, even late 70s.
Yeah. I mean, think of the textbooks. My textbooks, like yours, Steve, as a kid, TV Guide, Highlights.
Mm-hmm. Still make it.
Mad Magazine, mm-hmm. and SI.
Yeah.
I wonder why nobody's like, everybody recycles ideas for films these days. Why, Steve Willey, why hasn't somebody made a psychological thriller? A tale of two brothers torn apart by jealousy and envy. Goofus and Gallant. That's what we need. Goofus and Gallant starring Jake Gyllenhaal as Gallant and Tobey Maguire as Goofus.
I was just going to go Dwayne Johnson and Kevin Hart.
That's the sequel.
Oh, my God. Over on the wrestling feed where you're finding the show, You Don't Know Billy Jack number 9 finds Drew, my man Drew Wardlaw from Jenny and the Gems, and Jordan take a first look at Yoshi in an all-action Dream Rush Rager. In a two-part row one seat one, Ben interviews Brad Stutz and Grant Sawyer about their history in CWF Mid-Atlantic, and then for the first time discuss their separation from the promotion. I'm curious as to how deep dive that goes. On episode number 2 of With This... No, that was not a play on words. On episode number 2 of With This Ring, Ryan and Cindy continue going over their GWWE list with a look at bloodbaths. Guys, I am down to 102. I still have to knock 2 matches off to get my ballot down. We'll go into my ballot in 2020. I'd rather deep dive that than whatever the heck I was just talking about. And on the next PTBN Extreme Three-Way Dance, my PIC, Mr. Azzaro, Big Johnny and Jenny continue their ECW adventure with 3 episodes of ECW TV from the summer of 2004. I'm sorry, of 1994. I'm sorry, 1994.
I was going to say 2004.
Yeah. If I'd said 2006, we'd have been like, the zombie?
No. Yes.
Yeah.
For Joey Styles having to call that.
And the zombie's dead, by the way. The guy that played the zombie passed away, which is kind of sad. Be sure not to forget to check out PlaceToBeNation.com each and every day. We have new voices and fresh takes bringing you articles on topics in the worlds of wrestling, sports, and pop culture, including Trent's SmackDown on Fox Report, This Week in the WWE by John Crow, Paulie's Perspective, Jason's DVD Deep Dive, Ben's Unpopular Opinion. Don't forget about veteran columns like Glenn Butler's Weekly Walk Around the Web. And this week that's up right now, the last column of the season for myself and Logan Crosland of Your Campus Hot Takes. Oh boy, guys, what a weekend it's going to be for these conference championships. If you are listening to this as it dropped on Friday morning, tonight out in Santa Clara, the Pac-12 championship, Utah and Oregon, that's a huge game, obviously, because Utah still may get a sniff. As a matter of fact, if you are a Utes, Bears, or Sooners fan, you are salivating because it is almost a guarantee that Georgia is going to lose that 4 spot. Because they are probably going to lose to LSU down at the Bunt Pan in Atlanta. I can almost guarantee you that I think Clemson is going to throttle Virginia in the ACC championship, and I think Wisconsin has no chance against Ohio State. What are you feeling, Steve, walking the streets? You get the feeling, the beat, the heartbeat of your area. Are the Badgers feeling confident? Do they feel they could shock the world?
Badgers fans are eternally optimistic, so I'm sure they do. They could both pound sand as far as I'm concerned.
Well, the funny thing is, they did play earlier in the year. I'm pretty sure it was, I think it was at the Horseshoe. I don't think it was at Camp Randall. And Ohio State won 38-7, so I don't think the Badgers have a chance.
No, I don't think so either.
So I think Ohio State and Clemson will be comfortably there on Sunday at noon when they do the Final Four. I think LSU's in regardless. It's just a question of does the Big 12 championship game winner, which would be either Baylor or Oklahoma, take that 4 spot if Georgia loses? And are they a notch better than Utah? My honest opinion, quickly before we continue, I think Utah would lose to all 4 of those teams. So honestly, I think the Baylor-Oklahoma winner, if Georgia loses, I think the Baylor-Oklahoma winner should get that last spot. I think they should. Because, it's kind of lost its luster that Alabama's not in it, because I would love to see Jalen Hurts just fucking trash Nick Saban. But unfortunately, that's not going to happen. So we'll see what happens.
And, plus, you want to have – if all things are equal, I would think the selection committee would rather have as many Heisman hopefuls as possible. So you want Burrow and Hurts in there?
Correct. Yes. No, you absolutely do. You absolutely do. So we'll see what happens on Sunday at noon when the final picks are made. If you're doing online shopping over at Amazon.com, be sure to click on the Amazon banner on the right side of the Place to Be Nation homepage, or use PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon, and it takes you right to Amazon, helps out PTBN. No cost to you. Just buy your stuff, and instead of Amazon taking all of it, a little piece of it comes back to the site to help things out. Finally, for information on joining our GW...
You know, they sell GIMP masks. I'm looking for a friend.
Yeah, you know, I was too, actually. Something about being a ledge? I'm not sure.
That'll be our gimmick for those AEW shows. GIMP masks and cowboy hats.
and biscuits.
And biscuits.
And Cracker Barrel.
Like, it's hard to eat a biscuit. I got to keep unzipping the mouth hole.
Keep the mouth hole, yes.
They get crumbs stuck in the mask.
Speaking of, I don't think the GWWE pay-per-view and TV matches project has any GIMP masks because I can't think of anybody that wore a GIMP mask in WWE. We don't have to give Vince any ideas. Visit our.
What's his name wear one? Your man from the Oddities.
No. Golda? No, he just had a straight-up mask. It was just.
Okay.
Weird. No, it was just weird-looking with his Cartman shirt. And I have a stuffed Cartman. It's in my closet. It's right next to Dave Parker.
The Oddities. That was a slice in time.
How big is your closet?
I know, it's quite large. It's got a lot. I have a lot of awesome 70s and 80s athletes who are smoking in there and great Attitude Era trinkets. So they're all together in one big pile.
You got Mel DeMarcos' shoes.
Mel DeMarcos' shoes.
Half of the Beatles catalog that Michael Jackson auctioned off.
I wanted to steal from him. I have all of Triple H's different colored trunks from 2003. I got the whole shit going on. Oh, Jesus. Anyway, so if you want to join the GWWE pay-per-view and TV match ever project, visit our social media pages. Ballots are now open, and the ballot link is available on the Facebook group page. Ballots are due New Year's Eve. So if you're listening to this on Friday, when this show dropped, you have 25 days. So I've got 25 days. Yeah, I got 25 days to cut two matches. I might need your help, gentlemen, with that offline. We'll have to talk about it. Anyway, PlaceFanation.com, your home for everything pop culture. All right, guys. So it is time now, after all that hullabaloo, to get into our last installment for 2019 of the New Japan Classic Match Picks. I have the Who. And the reason I had this idea was because as I was doing... putting together my GWWE greatest TV pay-per-view and TV matches list, I was looking at – my goal was to try to at least have one match of every great rivalry. In some cases, there's two. I've got more than one Triple H Shawn match. I've got more than one Rock Triple H Shawn match. I've got more than one Rock Steve match because those three pairs had more than one five-star match or four-and-a-half-star minimum or four-star minimum, but – so I thought about it. I'm like, all right, well, I still need to pick matches for the guys. How about a good trilogy or set of matches involving two stellar Japanese wrestlers from yesteryear? And I vowed I was not going to do three Inoki matches, so you guys are very lucky. So I was looking at – if you follow on Twitter, at Mr. Lariato, he's like the New Japan guy. And he has a master Google sheet. That you can, I think you can request it if you follow him on Twitter. And it has a list of all of the great matches that you could find on New Japan NJPW World that are at least 4 stars or more. And he has it based on color. So I thought to myself, I looked at the list, I'm like, let me think of like two guys who had a killer feud in the 80s. Now, I know we already did Dynamite Kid and Tiger Mask, so I wanted to avoid that. We did that one already. I think I did that way back. So I'm looking at the matches. I'm like, well, my. These two guys actually wrestled 5 times between November of 1982 and August of 1983. And I asked, of course, our main event New Japan expert, Mr. Chad Campbell. And Chadley told me they wrestled like 8 or 9 times in the 80s, and probably all 9 of them are a minimum 4¾ stars. So I decided to bag the last 3 of those 5 matches between November of 1982 and August of 1983. They were wrestling for the now defunct, although a sexy looking belt, the World Wrestling Federation International Heavyweight Championship. So WCW was the only one that invented a belt that put the word international in front of it that Rick Rude carried around. The World Wrestling Federation also had an international heavyweight championship. As a matter of fact, one of the early 85 MSG house shows that Mr. Rosero and I covered on the Place to Be podcast. Actually, this one of the two guys defended that belt at the Garden, which was moderately badass. So, oh, this game's getting uglier and uglier, Steve. Jesus Christ. So, the gentlemen are your World Wrestling Federation Junior, International Heavyweight Champion, Riki Choshu, and the number one contender, who won the belt, who had the championship, and then lost it to Choshu in April of 83, World Wrestling Entertainment Hall of Famer, Tatsumi Fujinami. I mean, arguably, guys, two of the greatest ever. I don't think there's anybody that'll argue against that at all. But I wanted to have just two guys who are just solid workers who you know are just going to go balls out. So I picked the last three matches of the trilogy. So the dates were April 21st, July 7th, and August 4th of 1983. And if you have NJPWWorld.com, all three matches are there. In fact, I think the other ones that I mentioned from November 82 and the one that Steve accidentally watched today.
Yes, I watched four of the matches today.
You're a fucking animal. You really wanted to test that internet out, didn't you? From April of 83, which, by the way, was the match that Choshu actually won the title from Fujinami. Fujinami had won it back in November over somebody else. So, I picked this because, A, we're getting close to – we're heading into the throes of WrestleMania season, so I kind of wanted a WWE Hall of Famer, and really when it comes to New Japan, the only two guys are Fujinami and Inoki, and I really didn't want to watch three Inoki matches. So I decided, why don't I do this? So first off, Steve, your thoughts on both these guys?
Well, I've seen Fujinami before. I haven't seen Choshu yet, maybe once or twice. I was really interested in seeing the two of them wrestle together because they look like mirror images of each other. They have the same, like, black short tights, no yep. knee pads, except for the one match where it looked like Fujinami's knee was injured. The only thing that really differentiated each other was the mullet on Choshu yep. and Fujinami's, like, facial expressions.
Yep.
So it was... It wasn't even a clash of styles. They were very, very, very similar styles.
I agree. Nate, you're back. You're any experience of watching either of them?
I mean, I've seen more Fujinami than Choshu, much like Steve. Although we do got to give Brother Riki some credit as the inventor of the Scorpion Deathlock yes. or the Sharpshooter, depending on. Where you are in the world. But I was doing some research on these matches, and I got to give credit where credit is due. Over on Voices of Wrestling, mm-hmm. About 2 years ago, Brendan Patrick did a write-up of the entire feud.
Oh, wow.
And gave, like, some backstory. And so, like, the matches were good, but if you're just watching it without the back... I mean, they're good if you don't have the backstory. Like, if you're just watching them cold. Like, I think most of the people that watch these matches along with us are probably coming in cold.
Yep, I
was.
But
the backstory to this is Fujinami was kind of like the chosen one of Inoki in New Japan. Mm-hmm. And Riki Choshu was like the outsider. And so this was like one of the first big feuds in New Japan where instead of like doing the formula of Japanese star versus the invading Gaijin, it mm-hmm. was really the first time where you had two homegrown guys in New Japan that were fighting for the honor of the company, basically, and over this WWF international title. And so, like, now knowing kind of the backstory, it makes sense why everybody was so invested when you watch these matches.
Yeah. The belt, by the way, being the junkie that I am, looks a lot like Greg Valentine's green leather and I guess you could say the Morocco Tito Hammer era green leathered intercontinental title, the smaller plate, but it had it did have Backlund's like eagle on it, except it was white. It was like white metal, so it was pretty sweet. I liked it. It was pretty sweet looking.
When did they do away? Was it when Junior took over that they started to do away with all of these international offshoot
Yep, they dumped, yeah, Vince, which I thought was probably pretty fucking stupid, but yeah, he dumped the whole New Japan thing in late 85.
Because they had New Japan, they had stuff in Mexico and yep. Puerto Rico.
Yep, they had, because it was February or March of 85, I think it was February of 85, that Justin and I, JR and I on Place to Be Podcast had a Fujinami International Heavyweight title match. Mm. And I'm trying to remember something. Was it Matt Bourne? I think it was Matt Bourne, actually, that had the title. I'm pretty sure it was Matt Bourne. I'll have to double check on Graham/Landy's history of WWE.com. Pretty sure it was Matt Bourne. But JR and I had a very early Fujinami match, early MSG match from like February 80, because it wasn't March, because March was War to Settle the Scores. Or February. Well, wait a minute. Now I think about it. Hold on. February's War to Settle the Score. I don't think Fujinami was at that one, so maybe it was March. I'll double check. Anyway, it was one of the first three house shows before WrestleMania 1. I don't remember which one. I thought it was February, but that would be War to Settle the Score. I don't think he would have wrestled on that. So it was either January or March. Anyway, I think the tail end of 85, I think Vince dumped all these international things, which, well, that's another argument for another day.
It's like we've got too many belts. It's like we have infinite belts, and it's becoming a crisis. Damn it!
It is a crisis. It's not. We need to win the brand supremacy, and we're not letting the Japanese win the brand supremacy. We won the war. Damn it! We're not letting them win this one too. Well,
the crisis on infinite belts, and the cover is just
crisis on infinite straps.
The
yes.
cover is just Fujinami holding a prone Mil Máscaras in his arms. What happened to our belts?
What happened to our belts? Oh, God. Anyway. Jesus. So again, I was talking to Chad today, and he was telling me that they wrestled a ton in the 80s. Now, the first one I saw on Mr. Lariato's list was November 4th, 1982, for the title. Fujinami was champion. Fujinami was champion again when we got to April. That was the match that you watched, Steve, from Big Fight Series 2. Choshu won. So the first one that we're going to talk about quick is from April 21st, 1983, Big Fight Series 2 from the Kurumei Kogugikan in Tokyo, I think. And it's for the International Heavyweight title. This one for me was all about psychology because, as you mentioned, Steve, in that match, Fujinami had a bulky thing on his right knee. And as Nate mentioned, Choshu, one of the early innovators and users of the Scorpion Deathlock, which I assume he invented, he probably did. And it puts that Nick Jackson one to fucking shame. and with all due respect, Nate, your boy The Rock's sharpshooter needed some help too. But, rubbing ankles doesn't count. This one, the one he was cranking on Fujinami, even puts Bret's to shame, and Sting's. I mean, he was bending him over. I thought his toes were touching the back of his head. I mean, that's how much he was cranking it, Nate.
Yeah, and I had this conversation with W.H. Park from Post Wrestling a couple weeks ago for a show that'll be out a couple months from now because that's that's how podcasting works sometimes.
Yeah.
But we were talking about Liger and Pillman from the first Nitro. And at one point, Liger gets Pillman in the Scorpion. And so that led to like a side conversation about who had the best Scorpions. Was it Sting, Bret, The Rock? and then we got back to Choshu and talking about how oftentimes the inventor of the move doesn't get the credit, it's the person that popularizes the move.
Right.
In that case being Sting or Bret. But yeah, like I love the fact that you had Fujinami going for it as opposed to Choshu.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that became a pattern throughout the matches.
And then Ricky just smacked him in the face. It was like
oh my God. No, it was Fujinami was smacking him in the face, I think. Was it Fujinami smacking him in the face?
Fujinami did when he was on the ground, but then after Fujinami did the sharpshooter, then Choshu got him back.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, because it was a great little sequence where, like, Fujinami gets him in his own move, and then Choshu gets out and just smacks him in the face. And, like, that's wonderful.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
And now, like I said, now that I know kind of the backstory, it makes little moments like that come across even better.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And obviously they were focusing on Fujinami's injured right knee, and eventually Choshu cranks the death lock on, and eventually Fujinami had to tap out. So in this first match, Choshu wins by submission and retains the International Heavyweight title.
Is this one they tapped out? No, this is the one that he got tied in the Tree of Woe, right?
I thought that was the second one.
Let's see. Yeah. It's possible. Because I watched four matches. So
We're talking about the one from April, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one from... Yeah, I thought the one from April was when he was outside...
Yeah, because
in the guard whale,
Choshu won by countout.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. I'm confused. Then. I must be thinking of the other match. Okay.
Yeah. So they went outside the ring, and Fujinami's leg got caught in the guard rail. He put him in there.
That's right. That's right. What the fuck? I'm thinking of the other match. My bad.
And what was interesting about that is that, you know, you might say that's not a definitive win because it was kind of a. That's like a move I would do in virtual pro wrestling. You get the guy incapacitated out of the ring that you can't beat, and then
I thought you were going to say 2K20, but then you'd both be stuck out of the ring.
Yeah, and then we'd be going around in circles
and wrestling ourselves.
The first match I watched when Choshu won, he basically Fujinami kicked out at like 3.2. It was like a couple clotheslines. So it wasn't really like a definitive win. It was just like he just got him after a clothesline. Yeah. So I thought that was neat that they're like both matches. Like, yeah, Choshu won, but it was really kind of close.
Yep. No, I agree. And again, latent in controversy. So we fast forward 3 months, 2.5 months, to July 7th, 1983. From the Super Fight Series at the Osaka Prefectural Gym for the second matchup of 1983 between Riki Choshu and Tatsumi Fujinami for the International Heavyweight title. Fujinami's knee is much better. He's got like a half knee brace, like a half knee pad thing. But neither of them have tape on their hands. Choshu had tape on a hand, but he didn't have any knee pads. Again, both had black trunks. Fujinami has black boots and Choshu has white
boots. What do you guys think of that? Because for me, just kind of the similar attire was maybe the one drawback from getting into the match fully, but I think maybe that's more of an American thing. Just kind of viewing it from the lens of how we watch wrestling in the West.
Yeah,
I agree.
It took me a while, the third match out of the four that I watched to really get who's who, especially depending on the camera angle. And my wife was home today doing some projects for work, and I'm sitting there while she's doing real work and watching 1983 Japanese wrestling. Two big
doing
boys
all work, and
they're matching doing panties. It's work. So it's like, wow, look at what I'm watching. Like, can you even tell who's who?
And I think it was Choshu's white boots and he actually looked like Hashimoto a little bit.
Yeah, it was the mullet that kept me into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. This one was a little different. There was no knee psychology here because although they were trying to put each other in the and Fujinami was focusing on the figure four quickly early on. But Choshu was working on the death lock again, even though Fujinami's knee was in a little bit better shape than it was in the first match.
Yeah.
They really put the gas down, even though the clips, full clips on NJPWWorld.com gradually got longer. The April match, the clip was like 19:20. Mm-hmm. This match, it was like 23, and I think the one in August, it was like 25. That's not the length of the matches, because there was a ton of fucking around at the end of all those. The first match was probably, 14, probably. This match was probably 17, and the match we'll talk about from August was probably like 20 even. So they did get progressively longer, but this match I felt like a bit more of a sprint. And they were just hitting each other hard. I mean, there was no when they were locking up like arm bars and head scissors and shit, it was snug. It was very snug, Nate.
It was snug, and then we also got a little bit more intense. Like I'm thinking of the suplex from the top rope that Fujinami hit, and then like you saw again, each guy is kind of using more of the other guy's offense as a bit of strategy, a bit of a mind game, and I think the thing that I appreciate after watching all three of these matches and then going back and finding out the backstory from Voices of Wrestling is, and it's something I think wrestling could learn from today, is there's a way to have a non-finish but still make the match feel important. Make the match feel like you didn't waste your time.
Right. What do you think of that, Steve?
Yeah, they kept adding a little something in at the end, like what you're saying. It's not like the same exact match. And this one, I actually, you know, you said it was a sprint. I actually thought it started off really slow, and I'm like, oh man, they're gonna lose. And then I remember as soon as I like started writing that down, I'm like, they just switched gears. And so
they knew Steve Willie was watching 25 years in the future.
And it was like you said, the suplex, that was the first time any of them went to the ropes.
Yeah.
In any of the matches, including the one that I watched. And then Fujinami just went nuts. One thing I didn't understand, and I can make a parallel to current day New Japan, where Naito is loved in some cities, but like hated in one or two other ones. I think it's Osaka that he's hated in. There were times I couldn't tell who was the crowd favorite.
Yeah, I had issues with that too. I agree. Yes,
and so,
I did too.
Like, Fujinami in this match really worked like a heel, especially when we get to the finish.
Yeah.
Where he puts the sharpshooter on and won't let go of it. And then for a couple of minutes after the match, he still, you know, has it on. It's like, well, if he's the homegrown talent, isn't he the face? So, and then there, a couple shows they were cheering for Choshu, a couple ones they were Fujinami. So that part, and maybe I have to go and read that article. I'm glad you have that, Nate, because that gives us a little bit of a background story, so we can see this as, the whole world that it's living in instead of just the isolated matches.
Yeah, and I think the fact that they're so similar in kind of style and also in look, it's like, why, like, unless Ricky has gone out of his way to do something overtly heelish, why am I booing this guy that's really good?
Right.
And both of these guys are evenly matched, and so yeah, like you can tell sometimes the crowd is behind Ricky, sometimes the crowd is behind Fujinami, and I guess it just depends on the crowd that day. And then also, again, like, Fujinami here comes across more like a heel with the way this match ends than the supposed designated bad guy in Ricky.
And so Fujinami wins back his I'm looking at Lariato, didn't fix this. Choshu keeps the title here.
Because more
shenanigans.
Lost via DQ.
Yes. So,
and again, like two very creative no finishes, like that were different than each other. Like, you had the one where we had a count out, but it was a count out that made sense because of what happened in the course of the match. And then this one, it makes sense that Fujinami is frustrated that Choshu won't tap, and so he's going to keep the hold on even though he's supposed to break it.
Correct.
Yes. Yes. So, as a matter of fact, he did like my tweet, Mr. Lariato. Well, guess what? You didn't fix it. I actually tweeted him because I said, oh, a quick correction. Because according to his master list that he lets people it's only, you can't edit it. It's only for viewing. He has Fujinami as champion in our third match of the trilogy from August 4th of 1983, also the Summer Fight Series. This went back at the Kurame Kogugikan, which was where the both April matches were. What do you think of this match, Steve? I felt like this one also completely different than the first two.
I did too. I had a bit of a negative in the beginning of the match because we just went from having Fujinami just snap and really, you know, put the hurt on Choshu. The feud is heating up, and a pet peeve of mine that we've talked about before, when you got this huge feud, now we're going to do a 5-minute feeling out process, you know, trying to get a knuckle lock, locking up. And it's like, no, you guys should be beating the hell out of each other after all these matches. They're doing clean breaks. Like, Fujinami did a clean break a few minutes into the match, right after he refused to let go of, you know, the other guy's finisher just less than a month before. But then it picked up quite a bit after that. Then they were starting to get chippy with each other and slapping on submissions and rolling around a lot more. They were doing different moves towards the end of the match. Like, Fujinami had this huge running chop that we never saw, doing more suplexes than they did before. They had a ref bump, which they never had. They kind of had a throwback to the second match where they were throwing each other under the guardrails. So it was, Fujinami got busted open with, I think, off one of the moves on the outside. I couldn't tell where it happened. So, yeah, it started off like, man, really? This is going to be the end of the feud, just going slower than they have in any other matches? And it's like, oh, okay. Same thing. It's like they were writing for me, Nate.
Yeah, this one was like the culmination, like in any good trilogy. The third movie should be able to stand on its own, but also have callbacks to the previous two to really be effective. And I thought this one, like you saw, Fujinami had learned his lesson from the previous two matches. And he was able to withstand Choshu's attack, but also keep his frustrations in check in order to pull out the win. And so, yeah, I thought, like, I liked all three matches. I think I liked the third one the best, followed by the first one, and then maybe the second one last of all, but they were all good.
Yeah, they're all 5 stars. I actually liked the first one best, then the third, and then the second.
What about you, Steve?
What do you think? What was your ranking, Steve?
I'm thinking third, first, and second as well.
Okay.
I don't think the very first match, I don't think that would have been last out of the four that I saw. It was just a little sloppier. The one that you guys didn't watch, it was a little sloppier. So
yeah,
I'm glad you didn't pick that one.
Yeah. The list, like I said, Mr. Lariato, the guy who does the New Japan list. He color codes the matches that are like 4.5s and fives, and that one was not a five, the one you watched from April 3rd. So just looking ahead at his list for future matchups between the two, they wrestled again twice in 1984 in a tag match. Fujinami tagged with Akira Maeda. Ricky had Yoshiaki Yatsu. That was New Year's Day, 1984. Then they wrestled singles in February of 84, no belt on the line there. They would wrestle again. Let's see. Ooh, here's a match that we may want to look at. Fujinami had a world title shot against Hogan in June of 85 at the Tokyo Metropolitan Gym. That might be interesting. Fujinami wrestled Hogan a couple of times, actually, and Choshu wrestled Andre.
Interesting.
So, yeah, very interesting there. Were they both part of those NJPW-UWF wars, too? I think they were, right? Wasn't Choshu leading the UWF? Right? Wasn't that his gig?
I don't want to...
Shit. You know who actually would know this, believe it or not, of all people? Good old Will from Texas.
Yeah.
Because he first showed me those matches. I got to double check those. Those might be ones we look at down the line. But anyway, follow him on Twitter at Mr. Lariato, Lariato. He's a big New Japan guy, and he will let you have if you send him an. I think I don't know how we were able to connect. I think he just had a link, and you could see his full list. It goes just to and this is kind of what I've used for a reference point for some of the matches I picked for our segment. It goes all the way back to October of 73. Did I make us watch this match? Inoki and Seiji Sakaguchi against Carl Gotch and Lou Fez. Did I make us watch that? I think I did. I think I actually picked that as a match. I think that's when we had used to have Chad on, which is why he's not on anymore, because I probably picked that match. That's why. The last match he has he hasn't done any matches for this year, though. He's only done through the end of 2018. The last one he has is Tanahashi and Ospreay against Kenny and Ibushi. From December 15th, 2018. So, but he has got a ton of great matches to watch. Again, he color codes them. All sorts of good stuff with Vader, and I think we watched this match, Vader against Shinya Hashimoto. Anyway, a lot of great stuff. So, check it out.
Ricky Choshu just retired in June.
I know, right? Isn't that crazy?
Ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And Fujinami, of course, been retired for a while. And he's in the WWE Hall of Fame. So check it out.
Well, I'm not seeing anything with the UWF on here.
No? Okay. Because that's what those team matches were in 87. So anyway, go to, if you have NJPWWorld.com, look up November 4th, 1982. April 3rd, 1983, April 21st, 1983, July 7th, 1983, and August 4th, 1983. Those are the five matches involving Riki Choshu and Tatsumi Fujinami for the International Heavyweight title. Guys, thank you for your patience on that. I hope you enjoyed the matches. Brother Nate, I will hand you the shoe. And on our next segment, which be later January, well, probably early February, I guess. On our next, the next episode we have, you, sir, will pick some delicious morsels for us on our next New Japan Classic match picks. Because, of course, the next, you know, now it's back to TNA. And what do you think? You think Fujinami would have enjoyed wrestling with Bruce? Riki Choshu and Lenny Lane? I don't know. I'm just trying to warp things here.
Be a better match than what we get last time, Bruce versus Brian Lawler.
Oh, God. Or whatever that tag was. Oh, Jesus. Unpleasant. Anyway, guys, first off, another great episode in the books, as always. Secondly, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, this is our final episode of 2019. And I must say, guys, it has been another pleasure to share these internet waves with you for another year. We'll be celebrating the beginning of our sixth year of this show. This show started in 2014, and we are now, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. Yeah, we're concluding our sixth year here at Place to Be Nation's main event. And it has been an honor and a privilege through all the guests and hosts we've had, but you guys are the best. And it is always a pleasure. And I know both of you very busy. Nate, you've got 3 zillion shows. Steve, you're Steve, so you're always busy. And of course, you know where you live sucks in many ways. But you sound awesome, and I look forward, guys, to a tremendous 2020. I'm Barbara Walters, and this is 2020.
I'm Barbara Wawa.
So you're Barbara that makes Steve Willie Joy, and I guess I'm Whoopi.
Does that make me Elizabeth Hasselbeck? Yum. Anyway, so guys, we are going to take the rest of December off. We've all earned it. So Merry Christmas to all of our listeners. Happy Chinooka. Happy Kwanzaa. And
Festivus
for the rest of us. And we will see you again, and you will hear us again on Friday, January 10th will be the next episode after this one that drops. It will be our 2019 year in review. where we will recap everything that happened this year. And it was a quiet year news-wise in wrestling, wasn't it? I think it was. Not much went on. We hope to, and I know I always do this dance, we hope to get Brandon Howard back on. His life is very busy now. But hopefully we'll get him on to join us and talk about some of the fiscal schematics of professional wrestling, particularly, of course, with the big flamethrower at WWE. What will 2020 hold for all the big players? WWE, AEW, NWA, Impact, that dumpster promotion that Steve hates, New Japan, Ring of Honor. In Steve's eyes, Ring of Honor is now the Lord Voldemort of wrestling promotions. Promotion that must not be named.
Ironically, one of the people in charge likes to ask, do you know his name?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Do you know who I am?
Do you know who I am? Do you know my hot wife?
You're the guy that didn't honor my subscription for 3 months.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, God. Anyway, we'll be back. We'll be back in 2020 again on January 10th. For episode 140, which will be our 2019 year in review, we'll hopefully get some guests on. We'll hopefully get Brandon Howard on, and we'll talk about this year in wrestling, 2019, how it went, and as we begin a new decade, what will wrestling be like in 2020? For Brother Nate, I'm Brother Steve. This is Brother Scott. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Festivus, Happy New Year, and a new decade is upon us. Enjoy.
Hey, Steve Willie.
Hey, Nate Melton.
It's crazy that we were talking about Choshu and Fujinami, because when I used to live in Japan, Choshu actually did a series of commercials for the phone book out there. And like, he would just come on in all these crazy costumes, and he'd sing crazy songs, and like, the tagline for the commercials was just ridiculous. I still remember it to this day, Steve. The reason he used the phone book was so Ricky don't lose that number.
We hear you're leaving, that's okay. I thought our little wild time had just begun. I guess you kind of scared yourself, you turn and run. But if you have a change of heart, Ricky, don't lose that number. You don't wanna call nobody else. Send it off in a letter to yourself. Ricky, don't lose that number. It's the only one you want. You might use it if you
number. It's the only one you own. You might use it if you feel better.
When you get home,
Ricky, don't lose that number.
Ricky, don't lose that number.
Ricky, don't lose.